the McDouble is here to add some sizzle to your day. And now you can enjoy it with McDonald's 4 for 4 deal. Choose between a cheesy McDouble or a delightfully crispy McChicken. Then add 4-piece chicken McNuggets, a small order of crispy fries, and a refreshing medium-sized soft drink like an ice-cold Coke for just $4. Now that's a tasty deal. Swing by and add some sizzle to your day with McDonald's 4 for 4. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Welcome to Bigfoot
and the Bunny.
This is a couple's journey into the mysterious,
the unknown,
and the paranormal. I'm your host, Chris Carr.
And I'm your host, Kristen Johnson.
Together, we are Bigfoot and the Bunny.
All right.
Hi. Welcome to Bigfoot and the Bunny. I'm Kristen Johnson.
And I'm Chris Carr. How are you guys tonight? And you know, I don't even know if we said it last week, but Happy New Year.
Thank you for listening
to
that.
I know we all have a lot of resolutions. I know I am certainly working on myself. We have a lot of things to work on this year.
Yes, we do.
And I'm getting pretty excited about it.
Me too.
So, we have a great guest again this week. Returning is Al Tias, author of Project Rabbit Hole, and he's with us now. We're going to bring him on, and we're going to talk some more about ghosts, djinn, the fairy fae, gray aliens, and more, because we loved our conversation last week. Hey, Al, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. Thanks for having me back. It was a lot of fun last week.
Oh, thanks for doing it. We're really psyched. Yeah. We did have a good time, and we thought, let's do this some more, because we had more stuff to ask you and bug you and pick your brain, and we enjoyed the flow of everything. We thought it was a lot of fun, so.
No problem.
So, the first order of business. I wanted to ask you, I know we were talking about the Cold War and everything. Have you noticed at all, or had seen people post or anything that say that before and after wars, like World War II, World War I, people have seen UFOs before, during, and after more than usual?
It's a little harder when you account with the older accounts of wars, but I actually have seen that happen, and it's a little bit harder when you look at World War II in particular, because there are a lot of things in the sky, but we don't know what the Germans were working on either, so we don't know what exactly they were. So when it came to World War II, I had a bit of a difficulty with that chapter, because we don't know what was what, because there were so many mysterious and top secret things that everybody was working on with it. Right. So it was a lot harder to make conclusions with it. Of course, we've heard the stories about the Foo Fighters and different strange stories that happened, but we're really not sure with what was really going on with that. So it makes it a little bit difficult. But what we do know is, like, after World War II, it just seemed like the skies just kind of opened up with strange things kind of all over the place. And that was the part that I thought was really kind of interesting with it, but also was difficult, because we don't know what the Soviets were working on at the same time with it. So it's kind of hard to say what exactly would be a bona fide UFO and what was something that was experimental that either we were working on or they were working on.
Right.
So it's a lot more difficult, but there are some events that happened that really were pretty phenomenal. Like in 1952 in July, when a whole bunch of UFOs actually circled through DC, past the airport, and went around the Capitol Dome. And that was really kind of a mind-blowing thing that happened, because nobody's really sure what exactly that was. And that's one of the ones that really kind of stands out with the strange things in the sky. And it's kind of funny because I have a view. I live in a high rise, and I have a great view of Dulles Airport. So On clear nights, I would sit on my balcony and just watch the planes taking off and landing. And every so often, I'll see something out there and I'll go, I have no idea what the heck that is. But I have to give the assurance that it's going to be something terrestrial, even though I have never seen anything like that before.
Right. That's really interesting. I used to live in a small town, in like a rural town, and one of those really tiny airports, kind of, you know, the antithesis of that. And they use experimental aircraft. So every once in a while, you know, in a sort of rural area, you would see this sort of biplane go over, or you might see like a guy that's like in a, it looks like a hang glider with maybe a lawnmower engine hanging off of it, you know, it flies over the roof. You know, you don't really know what you're going to see.
It makes it even harder now because we have drones and new things that are flying around in the sky. And you don't know what people are going to put on a drone. You know, there are even videos.
That's pretty topical, my friend.
Yeah. And you're just not really sure with it. But when you have something happen like the Phoenix Lights, which was an event that I think thousands of people saw in Phoenix. And I write a whole section on that and how these people saw this thing that just blotted out the sky. And a lot of people saw this thing and
filmed it.
The government humiliated them with what they saw. The governor, the governor just made it into a big joke, and that's one of the things that you see that happens with this. When people report it, a lot of times they get mocked and they get laughed at and they get ridiculed with this kind of stuff. And I have had that happen a couple of times with some of my theories on things and stuff like that. So I can understand that when it happens, it's not a fun place to be when you're on the other end of that either, you know?
Right. Well, for modern times, I like the Phoenix Lights because it was at least filmed by multiple people, you know, with the advent of the internet and all kinds of ways to film and record things and also make things up, you know, being the opposite side of that. UFOs, you know, it's tough to believe a photograph. Hey, I just saw this over my house. Well, oh, did you really? You know what I mean? It's just too easy to Photoshop or use some kind of app to create it. But I getting back to something you mentioned earlier, World War II, Hitler, obviously known for his occult interests, you know, and one of the things I did like in your book was how you mentioned Helena Blavatsky and their concept of Vril and where that led to for Hitler and his group.
That was a really interesting time because Hitler, they actually, a lot of people say like they did it and they didn't do it, you know, but there's so many weird stories behind the occult with Nazi Germany. And one of the big ones was the mediums that they hired, these very Aryan looking, blonde haired, blue eyed, very attractive females. And
you mentioned Maria Orsic.
Maria Orsic was,
right, it was like this, like pretty much like a Norwegian looking, perfect Nordic.
Yes. And the guy, the beings they contacted looked just like her. They thought they were contacting these very tall, fair-skinned, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, Norwegian-looking beings that were like some sort of descendants of Atlantis or something connected with that. And they had the whole energy source. And allegedly, they were making those weird saucer-shaped UFOs that you see, which is the classic cigar-shaped UFO. And you see them even in like footage where they're kind of wobbling around and they're kind of weird looking. And they say that the Germans were experimenting on those, and they were getting the information through channeling, that these mediums were actually channeling these beings. And I put that in my book and I said, you know, they allegedly had help from these highly advanced beings and they still lost, you know?
Right, right. What I thought was really interesting is she says, and what you wrote in your book is that she was channeling them from Babylonia, Sumeria, the Middle East, being like an ancient race, a race that left, that was here in the past, left for Alpha Centauri, much like, you know, Zachariah Sitchin and others have derived from the cuneiform tablets, of course, in Sumeria.
Exactly.
So I don't know if that was an influence on his writings, that I'm not sure what the sources were for that, but I thought that was really, it struck me. I was like, oh, really? Somebody else thought this prior to Zachariah, prior to the cuneiforms being translated, that there was an ancient race here that left and went to some, you know, Nibiru-like planet. Mm-hmm. And they took that as truth.
One of the things that they did was they had this fascination with a lot of places in what they would call the third world. And one of them was like Tibet. And they were convinced that there are these little sections around the world that contained old relics from the Atlanteans. And they were really looking for some sort of Atlantean remnants or something like that. And that's one of the ways that they got the swastika from, was like it was like this old, very empowering symbol that they got. But they were going around there, and they actually, Hitler was sending like his guys all over Asia and different places to find these relics, to try to find these things, to bring them back, and then utilize those to try to make contact. It's almost, in a sense, are you familiar with chaos magic?
Yes.
Yes.
In a sense, it's like that. They were actually looking for the sigils and using the sigils in a way to bring in these, to make contact with these extraterrestrial beings or whatever they were. But there's a fine line between the extraterrestrials and what they would consider gods, because they were also trying to revive the Norse pantheon. They had temples to some of the Norse gods, like Odin and those two. And if you look at the height of Nazi Germany, you see a lot of different temples and weird structures like that being built up like this to try to get back into that old kind of Aryan, I don't want to say religion, but I guess you could say that interaction that they would have had with the Aryan gods like that. And Himmler was one of the big ones that was involved in a lot of that stuff. And he was like going to churches and holding seances and trying to make contact with dead military leaders and people like that, and that stuff too. And they were really kind of going, really delving into this stuff pretty deeply, if you really read the research that gets involved in it. And I just find it interesting, because before Nazi Germany was really established, all over Europe they had those occult lodges where people would like literally, if you want to learn anything about the paranormal, this is where you would go. You'd go to these occult lodges, and they would teach you
Golden Dawn and
full spirit contact.
Saturnalia.
Yes.
Yeah.
all that stuff, and Hitler closed them all down. He basically shut them all down as he was going through Europe and that. Then they became like non-existent, but he had his occult lodges, and the Nazis had their places where they were making this contact and trying to establish this vril energy that they were that they were using with it.
And tell us what the vril meant. Like Blavatsky had her own definition, but they kind of took it into another place.
It was kind of like an energy force. It was considered to be like an advanced energy force that they would actually use to empower things, basically. And then they actually had a group called the Vril Society with it. And from what I gathered in my research is that they were trying to use this Vril power to be like this new type of energy source. And if they could master this energy source, they'd be able to like do everything with it. Like that. And that's really what they were trying to do, is use this real energy source and make these ships that would be able to run by them. So they had the mediums making contact with these alleged beings, and they had these weird codes that they were writing out and everything. And these were supposedly these ancient languages that they were transcribing in that to get the formula together to figure out how to obtain the Vril and to create the ships that were associated with them. So they had all this stuff going on, and it's kind of interesting is here they are working with this Vril stuff, and here we are working with nuclear power, you know, and we wound up, of course, defeating them with, even though Germany surrendered first, we still, you know, had the whole, you know, big climax of World War II. But what I find interesting about this is that the Germans lost. And I come up with three hypotheses for this. And one is that the whole thing was just bogus. It's just urban legends and myths and all that kind of stuff like that, that came out of later stories.
Occult knowledge? Or?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be the first one with it, is that it just kind of all came out, it all kind of made up like that for one reason or another. The second one is we were working with our own technology with this kind of stuff to counteract them. Mm-hmm. And the third one is they were working with these things, but then the trickster element came up and they got betrayed, which is the theme I have a lot with my research, is like, they gained the trust of some sort of extraterrestrial, interdimensional beings. They gained the trust of it. And then ultimately, they end up getting tricked.
Right. And a bit like the child spirit that we were talking about.
Yes.
In the last episode where we mentioned the child spirit may endear itself and then mm-hmm. kind of find out it's not really a child spirit.
Exactly. Right. Or it was just like a trickster spirit like that was just kind of like, you know, we're really going to mess with this now, you know, kind of thing, and do this whole thing like that. And because the whole thing just wound up, you know, completely falling apart for them with mm-hmm. that. And they never really got anything really off the, you know, they really didn't get anything really started with this stuff at all like that.
Well, so, what really struck me, though, is like the story does follow like what Zachariah Sitchin wrote.
Yes.
It's supposed translations from the cuneiforms, which is debatable. Mm-hmm. And all of And we all know that, but, you know, to have this idea that these, you know, she's talking to these ancient beings, they're giving her, you know, divine knowledge, and then they took off to another planet.
Well,
you know, I found that I wasn't aware of any of that, nor was I aware that the Nazis and their inner circle felt like they were Atlantean.
That they were the descendants of the Atlanteans, yeah.
Yeah.
Like and that was the ultimate race.
That was
race.
The true Nordic race, was yeah. the extinct.
Exactly. But one of the things that's so weird about the whole thing with Zachariah Sitchin and all that kind of stuff like that is where that actually went. Because you have, like, you know, back in the 70s, I think it was, when Chariots of the Gods came out, and then all those other ones about those came out, and the gods were these ancient aliens, and all this stuff came out. And then this whole Nibiru thing came out, this 10th planet that has that really weird orbit, and all that stuff and everything. And it's almost becoming like the rapture, you know, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming.
Right, right.
And they keep saying like, it's going to come 2012 and you look out and there's nothing. Oh no, yeah. It's coming. The government's trying to block it. And you look out, no, there's nothing. And now here we are like 8 years later after 2012 and there's nothing. And there are still people saying like, no, 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 the planet's coming. The planet's coming. And it's like, you know, you have to reach that point with it. And again, it just has that kind of an element of deceit that comes out with it in one way or another like that, like the false prophecy or the big trick or something like that. You could even incorporate the whole Mayan calendar thing into that too. I mean, people were hyping that thing up for years. And then the day comes, they're all just kind of like, I guess we're going to do Christmas. You know, it's kind of that same element. That's why I'm at the point now where I just don't follow the prophecy things anymore. I never really did. But there have just been so many cases where things have come and they've gone. You just have to reach a point where you just have to say, like, look, if this one was wrong, they can all be wrong, you know, and chances are it's going to be wrong. Like that, you know, a little bit of a side story is on the I take the metro in D.C. and a lot of times you get like some very eccentric people on the metro. And I saw this old guy with a bicycle come up and he was handing out flyers. And he gave one to a soldier who was in uniform, and he gave one to me. Well, the only two he gave them to. Now, I had my ID badge out, and he might have read it, but I don't know exactly why he gave it to me. And I looked at it, and there was this whole big thing about how the planet Venus was going to fly out of its orbit and collide with the Earth on Easter. And there was this whole big, huge write up on this stuff and everything, and I'm just like, oh my god, you know, and I just was like,
creative writing 101
up with this stuff, especially when you're in the center of the government and you have these people all over the place and everything. So it kind of reaches that point where you just like, you don't, it just kind of starts to drive you crazy after a while when it comes to the whole prophecy thing, because I don't believe any of it. I don't believe in the Nostradamus prophecies. I don't believe in the I'm skeptical of the Edgar Cayce stuff, even though I looked a lot into him, but a lot of his prophecies did not manifest. A lot of that stuff just didn't.
It's so much just left up to interpretation. I mean, you know, did it manifest, did it not? Well and, I guess that depends how you look at it, right?
Like, you know, the Mayan calendar.
Yeah, and it's very cryptic.
You can make and black and white, depending on how you interpret it.
Yeah, exactly. So there's that whole concept of that too. But with World War II, there are just so many different weird stories that have come up with that fall into the whole.
I love the occult element, and you mentioned rightfully so that there was occult elements actually on both sides. Like Crowley worked with the British intelligence. That's a known thing. Mm-hmm. You know, at the same time, while Hitler was trying to find, you know, basically play Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of universe. You have a lot of elements that that come up with that during that period. And of course, like, it was the greatest period of transition in our recent history. You know, I mean, it changed the entire playing field. It changed the whole layout of the world. It changed everything. So you had a lot of factors that were going on with it like that. But then, like I said, though, once we started going into the Cold War and we started doing all the tests and all the other stuff that was going on with it, that's when things really started to open up. And you start to notice it now, because like you were saying before about before war and after war and strange things like that. Well, one of the things that's, I'm not saying that this is an example of this, but it's kind of similar, is that right around like about a couple of years before North Korea first started launching the missiles, People were seeing weird things on the satellites around North Korea. They were actually documenting like anomalies that were going on. They thought that the UFOs around North Korea. And then there were people that actually saw a UFO before North Korea hit Hawaii. I mean, not hit Hawaii, but before they were shooting out the missiles, they were in Hawaii. I'm sorry, it was when the whole alarm went off and everybody went crazy.
False alarm. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. The alarm, yes. Yeah.
And there were some sightings of things there. And the weird thing about it was
somebody posted some false alarm.
Exactly. Yeah. But somebody took some pictures on the shore in Hawaii, and they had these weird diamond-shaped anomalies in the pictures. I went back to find those pictures when I was researching that chapter. I couldn't find them anywhere online. And you know how hard it is to take everything completely offline. Mm-hmm. And I just find them, but I'm kind of like, I know where they were there. So I think I cited a couple of articles about it, but I couldn't find the pictures of it. But there were some really strange things that happened. So what I do now is whenever we have an altercation, like now we have Iran, you know, mm-hmm. we still have North Korea, and they're not going to go away.
What might have happened to that flight that crashed and killed 176 people?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But if you start looking around, and you'll notice that a lot of these places, these incidences around those incidents, you see strange things in the sky that happen with them. Now, the Middle Eastern people say that they're jinn. You know, and it's kind of weird that it's like the Middle East, but a lot of times the Muslims, they kind of say everything is jinn. So you kind of have to like, it's like kind of like what we do with demons. So you have to kind of like dissect it a little bit.
Right. And a little bit, you know, to be fair, on your book, you do say the jinn could be responsible for a lot of the demonic and elemental activity that
we
see, and poltergeist-like activity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because they are recorded with strange lights and anomalies and things like that with it too. But there are strange things that happen. And if you ever look at like the big world events like this, and you watch these big world events, if you start doing some searching through strange lights, you have UFOs and things like that, you'll see that UFOs appear. Israel gets a lot of them, for example. China gets a lot of them. Even though they don't really report on them, we still end up getting some reports on them. Right. Again, North Korea, various places like that are so, quote unquote, axis of evil. You see strange things like that. And
it's kind of a quote unquote.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of a weird thing to actually see that kind of stuff like that. And yet, oddly enough, another place where you see a lot of them, and I can't understand why, is Mexico. They see more weird things in Mexico than anywhere else. Like, I can't
quite do. They see a lot.
They do.
Yep.
Chupacabras too.
Yeah, they have so many strange things in Mexico and going down towards Central America, and I can't figure out what is going on with it. But if you just notice, though, in different sections of the world, everybody seems to have their anomalies, mm-hmm. and they're all kind of different from each other like that. And now we're starting to learn about them.
Kind of like
now.
The pyramids, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now we're learning them
ancient
through the
civilizations, really.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where it really gets kind of interesting, that now that the world is kind of coming together with the internet and mass communication, everything, and everybody's for the first time really seeing what other people have been experiencing, and they have it, they're seeing it like in live time now. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what becomes mind-blowing with that kind of stuff. Because
Iranian jet, the passenger jet that left for the Ukraine is actually a good example of that. You know, because various videos did pop up, and and nobody – did Iran admit that they used surface-to-air missiles? I mean, that's – everybody's saying they did. But if you see some of the video – it's kind of surprising that a passenger jet would be hit by a surface-to-air missile and have an engine fire.
It's also kind of surprising that...
Not to be a conspiracy theorist, not that I'm against conspiracies, but I followed the story pretty closely, and Kristen and I were talking about it a lot. one of the videos I saw, which was by a bystander in some alley, I cannot find anymore. Yep. I've been looking for it. So it goes right to what you're saying. It was on RT.
Yeah. You
know, Russia Today. And it's gone. It is vanished. And in that video, the fire looks very small. So if a missile hit it, it was like it threw a big rock at it and the engine set on fire. And then
like everything went off, like an EMP hit.
Exactly. And the only everything.
Right.
All communications are gone. GPS was gone.
Yeah.
It was like it vanished from the screens of fire. Anybody watching a plane.
It's kind of like that Malaysian plane that just kind of vanished, you know? It's there's some strange things about that. I find it so odd that they shot out all those ground missiles and they missed all their targets, but they managed to hit a moving target in the air. You know?
Right.
You have like a different missile and everything.
Seems a little intentional. I don't think Iran really wanted to hurt anybody with their missiles, but whatever happened with that jet, I don't know. It's a little mysterious to me, and I don't think we know the whole story.
No.
Yeah.
And this, I have a section in the book, getting back with the whole alien and UFO thing and everything. I actually have a section here called "What Does the Government Know?"
Yes.
And I go over all of the different presidents since the Cold War. I think I start with Eisenhower, and I go all the way to Trump about how different presidents handle the UFO question and how the earlier ones allegedly interacted very, very closely with whatever was going on with this. Even though you always have third-party information, I know somebody whose father worked for the administration, or I know somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody who worked in the cabinet, or something like that. It's kind of hard to say, but you had at least two presidents that saw UFOs, and it kind of like really kind of affected them, both Carter and Reagan. And I think one of them saw two.
Bush Senior also saw a UFO. Actually,
yeah,
he saw it over Freetown Forest. Now, do you remember Freetown? I know you're originally from this area. Freetown's a rural area within the, you know, the Bridgewater Triangle, which is under some notoriety in recent years. And he claims to have seen a UFO off Air Force One while flying over Freetown Forest, which has a whole range of paranormal activity. It's just a huge hotspot.
It's one of those hotspots like that. And there are certain places in the country that have those, like Utah has one. I think it's like Eastern Utah, where the Skinwalker Ranch is,
they see
things all the time up there. I wrote a whole section about the Skinwalker Ranch and how that place was so active. It was so active, and yet they didn't get one shred of evidence to prove anything. When they sent an entire team of scientists there, they had a whole team of the top scientists. I think it was called NIDS. And they had this whole team of scientists that went there and did all this studying. And they said, like, they would put a camera here, anomaly would appear over here. The scientists would leave to go somewhere, activity would happen, then they would come back. Every experiment they did, these things always stayed one step ahead of them.
Right.
And that's when I really started to look at that theory about the carrot and the stick.
The trickster element.
Exactly. because NIDS was like, I believe that they were called NIDS. That was funded by a very, very wealthy philanthropist that funded all the scientists and the equipment and everything that went into that ranch. And they had top scientists there and they got nothing. And one thing that we have to realize is that we try to use a scientific method for this. I think you start a hypothesis, you test it, there's a whole stage of them I can't think off the top of my head. And you can't fit this kind of stuff into the scientific method. And we don't have any equipment that is designed for looking for these things either. It's always something else. An EMF meter is created for something completely different than this. so is a Geiger counter, you know, so are all these other things that people use. And somehow it always turns into like, oh, I got a thermal cam, I'm going to use it for this, you know, because somebody somehow thinks that it's going to catch something, but it doesn't.
Right.
You know, you can
like
have
a degree of personalization, like I'll show you, but I'm not showing
everyone. Yeah. You can have an entire haunting happen with no EMF readings at all. You don't need them.
Right, right. That's interesting you bring that up. I have a video on, and it's on Dark Horse Paranormal. If you look for us out on YouTube, you'll find us out there. Where for a little while, I was cajoling or conjuring an entity that I'm familiar with, and I have a background in that. But it was making itself known in a way that I was able to prove it on a pretty much a day-to-day basis for a month. Mm-hmm. And we got very intrigued with this, and I filmed some of it. And I am sure probably most people that watch it go, yeah, that's complete BS, but it's not. What I did, I set up a Melmeter with a REM pod type attachment on it, which I'm sure you're familiar with. It records temperature, records EMF, it records basically static electricity with the RAM, a recorder, spirit box. And it would literally go from device to device, touching them. And it was just like it hit it with a jolt of electricity. All the numbers would go wild.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the RAM would go crazy. And at some points, it sounds like it's playing music. And I'll send you a link to this if you want to see it.
Sure. It's
absolutely genuine. I did this in my bedroom, literally. And it would move from device to device, whatever I had set up out there. How do you explain that? Was it EMF? No, I think it's just touching it. It was like literally touching it. So that one device records like three different things.
Mm-hmm.
They would all go crazy. You would see, it would say it was 500 degrees, and the EMF was a level that would probably at least kill a mouse. And the REM pod is screaming. So, you know,
something was broken too. Didn't it break something? Was it your recorder? What was it?
No, it's my spirit, the old school Hack Shack. I have an old school Radio Shack Hack Shack.
Well, okay.
And what it did, it actually drained the batteries. I thought it broke it. It started.
Brand new batteries.
Right. Do you remember the old school spirit boxes? Mm-hmm. It would scan at one speed, right? Da, 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 and it's just going to go because all you're doing is turning off the ability of it to stop. You clip a capacitor within it, which I did. And it just scans the radio stations and doesn't stop on one that it sticks to, right? That has a strong signal.
Oh, yeah.
It started speeding up.
Mm-hmm.
And you can hear it speed up. You'll see the numbers flash till you can't. The numbers are just a blur.
Uh-huh.
And it just goes, and it did that to the batteries died. The Melmeter device that I'm talking about, I actually sent the video to Gary Galga, who invented the Melmeter and all that, and asked him to review the video, and he did. And he broke down each part, and he said he could not explain why all three circuits in the Melmeter went off the way they did. Mm-hmm. So it'd be a ways to cheat or fake, you know, like one of the things, like you could put static electricity off to the side or some other, you know, way to do that. He couldn't explain how the three of them went.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't need an explanation. I know what was going on.
But
it's incredible. You know, and this video only has like a few views. People don't even get it, man. This stuff is so real. When you talk about elementals and you talk about Jin, you know, I'm not so familiar with the name as much as I am with certain other name tags or whatever, but we're all talking about the same thing.
Yes.
You know, this stuff is here and they're not necessarily human. They can touch things. They can control electronics. They can do things in your house that would surprise people who have not witnessed it.
That's why I feel like we have to start to really get out of our heads and move into completely new uncharted territory with things. And that's something I definitely do not see a lot of paranormal investigators doing. They're taking everything they learned from the past, especially like 10 years ago, and they just keep on utilizing those things over and over again and not looking at some of the newer possibilities. For example, could a spirit possess something with artificial intelligence? Is one thing that you have to look at with it. You know, we know that they
very possess good a point to bring up. This week, though, we posted a news story about Tufts University and University of Vermont. I've been creating what they call biological robots, and what the University of Vermont has a supercomputer. And what it does is look at if you combine cells in a certain fashion, what could happen through evolution to create a certain result. Mm-hmm. Okay. So they created a being through a combination of frog stem cells, not necessarily a living being, but not a dead being. It moves.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it
crosses a Petri dish. Yeah. Right. That's all they wanted to do is like have it cross a Petri dish, mm-hmm. but it does its one job and it dies in about 7 days. It doesn't really die. It just rots away.
Yeah.
All right, so it's basically a robot. It's built with an
intention. Right, they want to clean up the ocean with it. They can make this to do one job.
That is the future of it. They want to be able to maybe implant, you know, a nano version of it and to push drugs to certain parts of your body or cleanse your arteries. But it's created by AI. Man cannot do it. It took billions of calculations for it to come up with this combination of cells that would evolve. It's basically using evolution.
Mm-hmm.
The results of evolution, how to put those cells together to make it do the one job.
And you also have the electronic part of it. Like I'm looking at Hanson Robotics. They created that being called Sophia. It's that robot that looks almost like a person.
Yeah.
They're just constantly adding more and more information to it and starting to have emotions and think and these things. And now you imagine if you had a being like this and you take the entire database of the Library of Congress and put it into this thing and it's that, and it knows all that, you know, you just constantly download information into it like that. And when you look at that, and then if it's an empty cell, stop it. Alexa, stop. I'm sorry.
Speaking of the witch.
Alexa, stop. Right.
That was awesome.
Yeah, I know, really. It's the perfect time for that, too.
That is, yeah, that was.
It just pops on.
You can't make it up. That's awesome.
But but that's part of it. So if you have something that's artificial, and it's a shell. We know jinn can occupy a statue. We know they can occupy a doll. Can they occupy a robot? And what if they occupy a robot that has a ton of information already in it?
Right.
Then where do you go from it?
Well, you know, at what point does biology become the crutch, right? And that's the thing Elon Musk warns about. He says, mm-hmm. you know, AI is going to get so far that biological beings are going to become a crutch for it. And it could easily just decide, like, I don't need you anymore. I can make myself.
Or evolved spiritual being can possess it, is what I'm thinking about that. Like, why would a demon, if this thing is so much more advanced, why would a jinn or a demon or anything else, why would they want to possess a person that can possess that thing?
Perhaps it's a perfect vessel for it, really. You know, who's to say?
It's something that I have really pondered with it. And this is the kind of stuff that I'm saying that we have to start moving ahead with things because the world is accelerating around us.
Well, like we still don't accept the old school concepts of something like a jinn, something that was not human, but does exist. And I know for a fact exists. I've seen it enough times to say, yep, that's real. You know, I have no question in my mind. I'm not talking about evidence. It has gone from data to belief because I've seen it enough times.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And those are the things we have to.
But it does. Science hasn't reached that yet. So no. There's us in between people that sit here and theorize about it or say, hey, well, I had this experience, man. You know.
But they are getting close when you look at things like CERN and quantum mechanics and different things like that. You see that right. They're starting to reach this point, like they can at quantum least computer. Know that it's a possible parallel dimension.
Thoughts can make a difference. That's a lot of it. The power of thought, and you can predict the outcome, you know, beyond randomness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But when you look at things like unified string theory, and you think about we're here now. Now, 5 minutes from now, we could do one thing this way, we could do one thing that way. If we do it this way, does this way just cease to exist? And the parallel and multidimensional universe.
Or does it live in its own, right? All outcomes are true.
All outcomes are true. So there's a world where Germany won the war. There's a world where Russia, the United States collapsed and the Soviet Union is superpower. There can be a million and one different thoughts with this. And so you have to kind of look at it like that. And the question is if we can kind of like poke through those or not. And that's where it gets kind of trippy when you get into those kind of things like that, because if we can poke into that dimension, and CERN is starting to show that that's a possibility there through their like little black holes and the things that they're doing, how do we know that they can't come into ours? That's why I think that this stuff is a lot more interdimensional than what we kind of like we're taught to think. Like, there are people who are convinced that aliens are linear. They're like from a planet and they travel miles and miles away. No, that's not what happened. They have to have some sort of really advanced physics to do that. And they
our biology that makes everything linear. And I think I brought that up last time. You know, we're limited by our perceptions. That's where we see that limiter linear fashion and way things move. And, you know, the idea of, well, I want to go see something that's behind my neighbor's house. I have to go walk around to see it. I think in a spirit realm or maybe entity realm or alien realm, it's mm-hmm. simply is a matter of wanting to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's
certainly in the astral realm it is.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of where I go with that stuff. And so I just am convinced now that everything is going to change very drastically. And that's really what Project Rabbit Hole is about, is how we have to keep up with the changes of things and how this is going to change the world of the supernatural and how this is going to go. Because a lot of the things that are going to happen that already are happening, paranormal investigators particularly are kind of laughing at it. Like, this is just a crock. It's kind of like I said last week, I just said, like, the ghosts are here and they have their own little world of the ghosts and all this stuff. Meanwhile, all this other stuff is happening over here. And this could be part of this, but they're not paying any attention because they like this, you know. But sooner or later, this is going to morph into this. And then when they have that happen, then they're not going to know what to do.
Right.
And I agree with that.
In a certain way, that little story I just told you about Tufts University
mm-hmm.
brings that to light, right? So they're taking cells, they're forming cells, evolving the cells. For mm-hmm. this thing to have one function, it's biological. Mm-hmm. It's a robot, but it's biological. It has no mechanical parts. There's no chips. There's no nothing.
Yeah.
It just does its function, and it's made of tissue of some sort.
It's
so
amazing.
What does that mean? Like, what are the bigger implications of that?
What
is our value as tissue, you know?
It's kind of amazing when you look at that, because, like, on my social media and – I just recently started to really start looking at the whole paranormal realm and social media, because quite frankly, a lot of it annoys me because of like what I said. And I just look at what the people are putting up there. Ghost pictures. Yeah. I'm kind of like,
I wrote a book on that, actually.
Yeah.
I have a book. I don't know if you know that, but I wrote with Clarissa Vasquez about ghost pictures and debunking all the common little things and that people attribute paradolia. To.
Yeah.
Yes, psychosomatic paranoia.
What is this thing doing? I'm sorry. I'm trying to stupid thing off. I guess the whole thing with it is the problem I have with that is not really that, but it's what is the whole big picture with it? Like, people aren't really following all the other things that are going on with this. They're just focusing only on that part of it, you know, and that's the problem that I kind of have with that.
Well, everybody wants to see a face and a full-bodied apparition. Like, exactly. That is the holy grail of the paranormal, right? And, you know, so we're led to think.
Exactly. So that's a big that's
they really want big, the perception.
That's really a big part with it, because I think that's what I call them, our elusive friends. That's what I call all the beings in this. My euphemism, and I think that's part of what our elusive friends want. They want people to think all this stuff is, in a sense, they want to think all this stuff is harmless, so they can kind of toy with things more and more with it and that stuff. While when you go if you scratch the surface, and that's what you see. But if you start to really do the research, like I did, and look at it from a much, much bigger picture, you start going, there's a lot more to this than this. And that's kind of...
I know we're getting a little close to our time, and we can go a little later tonight than normal. But one of the big points you make in your book is that these things are real. There are things out there. These concepts of...
There's no doubt. Again,
these concepts of the occult, of magic, of witchcraft. You have a lot of warnings in there. And certainly a lot of our listeners are into this. I know Chris and I are. And, you know, and we have seen the good and bad from that ourselves.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And you take some steps to banish and, you know, protect oneself. And I know you had some, I think, brick dust and some other things you wanted to maybe share with our audience about what...
It's kind of funny because a while back I wrote an article about this. This was years ago. I wrote an article about some of this stuff. And a forum on a TV network that had one of the reality shows on, a bunch of people, apparently they searched me and they found my articles and they started putting up the things I put in the articles that just were like mocking the heck out of me with it. And I just kind of went on there and I just went like, I just so want to go back and troll these people. But I was like, nope, they haven't done it yet. But I do, because like I said before, these people just think that science is going to solve everything. And it's not. There are time-tested traditional things that also work. And one is iron. Pure iron. One of the things you notice a lot of times when people get afflicted by a haunting or by an entity or whatever like that is they have low iron count. Women especially, because of the menstrual
cycle.
That's
me. That's where I was going to go with that.
Yep. And other different types of people. I keep hearing something back there. I'm like, I don't know what that noise is. Sometimes I have weird things happen when I talk about this stuff. And my cat's right here. So anyways,
we're used to it.
Yeah. So you have the element of iron with it. And the way you know it's pure iron is it's magnetic. It's that simple with it. You don't want to use cast iron because that's mixed with carbon and that will completely deplete the ability with it. If this is in chunks, like slivers, I
shavings?
Keep my shavings, not shavings because that's like powder, but if it's like in like little pieces, I'll keep a piece of it in my wallet. I'll keep it in the car. I'll keep one like by my where I sleep, and I also put them under the threshold of my place here, like that, so nothing can kind of come in like that, just as a safeguard. I also put salt under the thresholds to try to keep anything from coming
very
in.
Very traditional.
And I use brick dust, which is really just
brick dust is intriguing. Tell me more about the brick dust.
It's red brick and it's powdered. And this is an old hoodoo tradition, like mainly from Louisiana. And it's just pulverized brick. Mm-hmm. And it's if you sprinkle it under your door, like in a threshold or whatever like that, under windowsills or all that kind of stuff, it prevents people from getting in.
I'm familiar with the tradition of doing that with through hoodoo. I never knew really why. Why does brick dust? Iron, I can make some sense of. I do like we were talking about before the show. I was taught in a coven I was in actually that spirits cannot cross iron. Mm-hmm. So you know the idea of making a circle of iron with iron dust around your bed or around your house or dwelling makes a lot of sense in that way. And of course, salt has a more widely known history than that. But yes. Brick dust. I never knew. What is it?
You know, I am not positive where it comes from, actually. It's just something that I've always kind of done. So I just kind of said, like, you know, it's kind of like one of those things, well, why brick dust? Well, that's what they do.
That's and what they do. It's time-tested and people...
I'll do it then with that. And that's,
well, you have found that it works well for you.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because... I was talking last week with this guy from Eastern Europe who I do I'm actually in a research group with him, and it's a research group on like non-human entities and things like that. And he does dowsing, and they actually go into places and they just kind of like clear them out, like in Asia, places like that and everything. And he's Latvian, I believe, Latvian or Lithuanian. Anyways, he said to me, he goes like, well, I just scanned you, and you really don't have too much on you. I'm surprised with all the places that you've been to. And I said, I'm glad to hear that, for one thing. I feel a little violated that you scanned me. And I take a lot of precautions with these things. In fact, I've had two people try to remote view me, like through astral projection, and they both weren't able to penetrate. And one just said, like, you have a fortress around your place there. And I said, yeah, absolutely. You know, that's how I keep it. Cool. The reason why is because these things work, because I don't want anything uninvited in my place anymore. I used to have things follow me home. I used to have like a lot of strange things happen. I used to bring things home, like weird objects and stuff like that and everything. And I don't do that anymore. And another thing is, this is just called Fiery Wall of Protection. And it's an incense that I use. And it's a combination of frankincense, myrrh, dragon blood resin, and salt. Mm-hmm. And when you burn this, it's very smoky. You like put it on like the charcoal thing and you just let it burn. And it gets very smoky because it's all resin. Smells fantastic. It's just got a great smell to it because it's all those perfumey resins, if you like that. Kind of smells like a church. But it will reduce the any negative vibes or anything like that. The little things that come into the home, it'll get rid of that kind of stuff like that. That's
dragon's blood resin. I love the smell of that. Oh, but it's very, very smoky, right, Chris?
So smoky.
I used the smudge stick. The last time I went down to New Orleans, I went to the store and I got some smudge sticks. And I actually, the one time when I was writing the book, I was having weird things happen in here, and I was very uncomfortable with it. So I smudged the whole place. And then I left the smudge stick going, and I didn't know that all the smoke was coming out from under my threshold. So I ended up having security guards at my door, and they just kind of read me the riot act about it and everything. And what can I say? Look, I'm trying to make
sure. What are you up to?
You know, and I mean, what do you say about it except like, yeah,
you know, that I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
So, fumigating.
Exactly.
Exactly. So
it was like, you know, a little hard when you do this stuff like that. But one thing I also I have that I used to use, and I want to just mention this, is this is an authentic spirit bell from Prague. And this thing has actually worked. It's designed specifically to detect ghosts. I don't know how it works or spirits, but I was at the Kennedy Farmhouse years ago. And that place is really active. It's the place where the John Brown held his raid, the big rebellion over in Hopper's Ferry. And I got to investigate there a few times. It was one of the most haunted places I've ever been to. And one time we had this safe room that we would go into. We had this safe room, and we would all stay in the safe room. And that then, like, it just do surveillance of about everything else. And one time, just like 2 a.m., we just heard footsteps. It was just like bing, bing, just twice. And we were all like absolutely mind blown with it because we knew nothing was in there and something hit the bell just two times. And when you ring it like this, it hits both sides of the clap. The clap hits both sides. It went like this. Like just like that, and it was really kind of phenomenal like that. But
that's wild.
From what I was told, they only make these in Prague, but I'm not sure about that. They probably got pretty marketed with them nowadays with it. Yeah, but
the symbolism of a bell is pretty old and certainly strong enough to carry.
There's always an association with spirits and bells, and especially bad spirits being repelled by bells because of the vibration of them, like with the church bells, and that vibration of the waves, I think, sound kind of like deter them, I think, with that. But there's a lot of
symbolic importance or even a commendation.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff about this stuff. And like I said, my book goes over a lot of it. And I still think about all the things that I didn't even scratch the surface with talking to you guys.
I know.
Like, that's why we brought you back. There's all kinds of stuff to talk about. I can talk to you about bells.
I do want to mention before we wrap up is there are – keep an eye on two big things I'm looking at now. One is using memes on social media as sigils, and Chaos Magic is one that's becoming really, really big.
It's because a good book about Donald Trump about just that.
I think I read it.
I forget the author's name, but
is that from the guy who was like in Blondie? There was a
band. Yeah, tied into that too.
He and I came up with the same resource sources.
It was like the guitar player.
Yeah, exactly. I wish I remember his name because it was a great book. But they have figured out a way to use magic with sigils and produce them through the internet to do. Not only to do magic and to do work in the occult and do magic, but to also work with entities by using a very, very modern form of chaos magic doing this.
The whole thing about Pepe the Frog.
It's much deeper
than people think.
I was going to mention that because I do have a prop here of the big frog.
There you go. There it is.
The original Pepe, the laptop guy, and the DNA strand that comes out of it. And there's a whole section in my book about this. I wrote the entire blow by blow of it with 4chan, with the emergence of the election, the numerology, the similarities behind it, and all that stuff. And I mentioned two other very significant deities from the old that are coming back now, and you're going to have to keep an eye on them. And one is Santa Muerte, the Latin American.
There's a lot of her
coming in the future. And the other one is Dionysus. And we could talk about that another time, but I do a lot of writing about Dionysus and how dangerous that cult is that's coming up with him. And there actually are new cults coming up. I don't like using the word cult because it's not the same, but there are new followings of Dionysus. And to me, those two in particular are the most dangerous. And I write about that a lot in Project Rabbit Hole. They're actually doing human sacrifice right now. Yep.
Not criminals. Very interesting, actually. Essentially.
And police in areas that have high amounts of Latin American, whether it's immigrants or just community, if they go into like a lot of places, if they like it's like a drug den or something like that, they'll find altars to Santa Muerte.
Yes.
And they'll find all sorts of weird stuff.
Right. One of the big things in one of our investigations, I'm going to be real quick because we only have like, I don't know, 2 minutes.
But, sure.
Was, you know, we investigated a mausoleum where the bones were stolen out of the, for Santeria reasons. And it has led us down a rabbit hole.
If
you follow our show, you'll know a little bit about it. Very interesting.
You'll see a lot more Virgin Mary statues with chickens, dead chickens around them, because they're doing that as well. Because the chicken is the big sacrifice for a lot of them. And
sure,
they're not doing it for Mary. It's just like most likely it's Santa Muerte that they're doing it with. They're just using the Mary image as a
thoughts of chicken death there.
Really amazing.
I don't want to cut you short. I would love to talk to you all night. I wish we had another hour. Where can people find your book? I want you to be able to see.
They can
let people know where they can find you.
The best place they can find it is under lulu.com because they send it right in from the printer. lulu.com/ATYAS. And that's my author page. You can find it from there. ATYAS. It's my first letter of my name and the last name.
Can they get it on Amazon as well?
They can get an Amazon as well with it too, and they can find it on there as well with it. But I offer a small discount on Lulu, so you save like some money on it with it. So that's the way to do it. I have it in ebook form. I have it in paperback. And if you want to contact me through Facebook or through email, whatever like that, I'll be happy to we can make arrangements for a signed copy.
How can they find you? It's Al Tias, and how do you spell your last name?
T-Y-A-S.
All right, that's easy,
right? They can also search Project Rabbit Hole on Facebook, and I have a whole page for Project Rabbit Hole. And they'll see the cover of the book there and go right from there, send the message, and it's a lot easier for me to contact you there, and because I know just where it's coming from, and I've been getting a lot of great feedback from it, so it's been good. But
that's catchy. I love the name Project Rabbit Hole. It's easy to remember.
What I love, the guy that designed this did a great job, because it's a uranium green rabbit, because I wanted to give it a bit of a Cold War feel to it. So I did the green uranium green rabbit with it, so, and it kind of stands up.
Very cool.
Yeah, but it's been a lot of fun, and I'm always around, and you know, and I love talking about this stuff. Like I said, I don't get involved in it, you know, directly anymore, but I'm willing to talk about it, as long as I'm not going to encourage you to like, oh yeah, go find the ghost, do this, do that. I'm going to be hesitant with it.
Right. You know, and it's something we need to be conscious of too, because we have our own beliefs and there's things we do. And I don't necessarily want to encourage everybody to do exactly what I do or follow my life path, because it hasn't been that easy a path. But it certainly had a lot of highs and lows.
Mm-hmm.
And I have certainly seen some stuff.
But just think about it.
Lots of stuff.
Yeah, once you go down that hole, you can't go up. You know?
Yeah. It's a deep hole. We're way down the rabbit hole now.
Caution and respect. So, right. Okay, guys, but I don't want to keep you with my rambling. So, thanks a lot.
Again,
no worries, man.
We'll
thank you
you
so much.
No problem. No problem. Take care. Thanks again for having me back.
Right on. Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Have a great night.
He's awesome. We should have him on next
week. Thank you for listening
week.
To another episode of Bigfoot
and the Bunny.
We'd like to thank Joe Montaldo for his engineering and support.
Thank you, Joe.
Be sure to look for us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter.
You can also find us at Dark Horse Paranormal and Purple Raven Paranormal by searching those very same outlets. You can email us at bigfootandthebunny@gmail.com. Thank you.
Catch you later.
Bye.
The McDouble is here to add some sizzle to your day. And now, you can enjoy it with McDonald's 4-for-$4 deal. Choose between a cheesy McDouble or a delightfully crispy McChicken. Then add 4-piece chicken McNuggets, a small order of crispy fries, and a refreshing medium-sized soft drink like an ice cold Coke for just $4. Now that's a tasty deal. Swing by and add some sizzle to your day with McDonald's 4 for $4. Price and participation may vary, cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.